Hello and welcome to Following the Rules. This is a podcast about the rules shaping UK and EU financial services and the people responsible for understanding and implementing them. Because in one of the world's most regulated sectors, following the rules isn't always easy. I'm your host, financial journalist Lucy McNulty, and every episode I'll be asking the most influential personalities in financial regulation for their input on the sector's most pressing issues.
Some oversight of social media seems likely to be a forthcoming requirement at some point.
Today's episode is a special one, produced in association with Global Relay, a technology firm providing global financial services firms with the software to capture, store, and monitor their employees' communications. Today's guest outlines how financial services companies and their regulators are preparing for an expected clampdown on employees' social media use. He outlines how an increasing regulatory focus on city workers' behaviour in and out of the day job is changing their bosses' approach to capturing and monitoring their communications. And he details how firms are using new technology to address compliance pain points when dealing with communications supervision. Rob Mason is Director of Regulatory Intelligence at Global Relay. Hi, Rob. Welcome to Following the Rules.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Regular listeners will be familiar with Global Relay as a technology firm, but could you give us a run through of your role within the company?
Yeah, sure. There's a number of key pillars which I support at Global Relay. Yeah, a compliance officer is very short of time and doesn't always have the time to go through a final notice of an enforcement action. So I'd help by summarising what the key actions are. Secondly, I make sure our solutions are in tune with what compliance teams and regulators expect and want. And I guess lastly, I help with some of the sales efforts where I can help clients and prospects understand how our solutions might ease some of their challenges. As way of a brief introduction, most of my experience previously has been working as a compliance officer within tier one banks for about 9 years, where I was responsible for the global oversight of market abuse monitoring. So that's trade surveillance and communication surveillance. This was at a time when there was something of a checkered regulatory history for investment banks. Before that, I spent 5 years with the UK's conduct regulator, the FCA. My time there included setting up the team which supervises our market abuse regulation regime. So that included reviewing and examining all of the regulated firms' capabilities around trade surveillance and communication surveillance for market abuse monitoring purposes. Looking back, those were times when the market abuse risk identified was around collusion, where traders shared sensitive information regarding client orders and activities in order to benefit themselves and potentially disadvantage others. Most of the banks at that time had some trade surveillance, but very few were looking at communication surveillance. And of course, collusion could really only be identified when you review the communications, and hence communication surveillance was born. The regulators also responded post those events and required firms to review orders and not just trades. So this resulted in banks deploying pretty basic communication surveillance across a narrow population of traders, which generally comprised of word searches and mainly focused on email for basic terms which were deemed suspicious. The evolution of that has been with advanced technologies, including that which Global Relay provides. Wider populations of employees are in scope across a broader range of risks, across a broader range of communication channels. More recently, spoken and voice communications monitoring, all using increasingly sophisticated ways of identifying suspicions of market abuse. And this continues to evolve.
What's topping your to-do list currently, Rob?
There's quite a lot going on. We saw a fairly significant number of fines come out of the US regarding off-channel communications. So this was originated with the SEC in the US requesting some information relating to an investigation which they were undertaking. And the firm was unable to provide the full communications chain surrounding the issue. And they soon realized they had a problem with business activities being undertaken on non-approved devices. And this is where we're seeing WhatsApp come into play. The firm went back to the regulator and confessed to the fact that they were missing a proportion of communications. And that resulted in the first of a string of fines for firms who soon realised they were all in very similar predicaments. This seems to have come about, or at least precipitated by the COVID lockdown, that wholesale everyone working from home situation led to lines of communication being blurred between home and work, picking up your work phone instead of your personal phone. That all seemed less important. This in conjunction with the ease with which comms is available using an iPhone or an Android phone, creating a group message on WhatsApp is pretty much effortless, even if you're uninitiated or unfamiliar. It's pretty intuitive. If you are old enough to remember this, but building a group chat room on Bloomberg, which is quite an old technology now, it's quite an onerous task and takes a bit longer. So financial services colleagues chose that easier path. So capturing all the different channels which have emerged is now top of the list. And that's all the different channels of communication that businesses require in order for them to be compliant, because they need to be captured for record keeping and for monitoring for market abuse. And that might be determined where a client will only do business with a firm on the communication channel of their choice. So that risks firms who aren't prepared to cover those channels that they may lose business and be at a commercial disadvantage. And what we found at Global Relay was we spent a lot of time on technology which allowed different data channels to be captured and then plumbed into the surveillance and record keeping solutions and so be compliant with the respective regulations. And on that, there's a general regulatory requirement for record keeping in the US and in Europe. And what these are saying really is all records must be retained by financial services companies where business activities are being undertaken. So if a regulator or a third party has a dispute, there's a written record that can identify what the issue is. Then when you delve a little bit deeper into the market abuse requirements, there's a couple of those across different jurisdictions. That requires firms to review and supervise communications in relation to market abuse. Now, market abuse in the simplest terms is probably insider dealing, which is a concept which most people get the hang of. That's sensitive information which is shared with folks that shouldn't be shared with, and people dealing on the basis of it. And market manipulation, which is slightly more challenging both to explain and to identify, but that might be where you're giving a false and misleading impression to others in the market and therefore making them believe something's happening when it's not. The regulations around that in Europe and in the UK, firms must establish effective arrangements for systems and controls aimed at preventing and detecting market abuse. And that's what a number of firms tend to get fined for. And in the US, firms must develop appropriate policies to review business-related incoming and outgoing communications with particular relevance to electronic communications.
Okay, and as we know, mobile communications surveillance remains a major compliance challenge for financial services companies globally. And as you've alluded to, we've seen regulators in the US aggressively clamp down on bankers' use of so-called off-channel communications or text and private messaging apps that cannot easily be tracked by their employers. In 2022, 16 US-based banks were fined $1.8 billion for their employees' use of encrypted messaging apps. And a similar crackdown by UK regulators has been expected since, but that has not yet come to fruition. What has prompted this regulatory focus in your view?
The short answer is that regulators have a difficult enough job with all of the information at their fingertips. And having worked at the FCA, I did some work around some enforcement cases and the high barrier of proof that's required in order to demonstrate liability is really, really challenging to reach. Now, doing that with a puzzle that you've only got some of the pieces of becomes an almost impossible task. And the regulators are now setting the expectation that how important it is to have all of those pieces of the puzzle. And this all began when there was an investigation into a firm to provide some communications that they didn't have. Now, that means that regulators were unable potentially to enforce an outcome because they couldn't find the evidence to provide it with. And that was obviously a regulatory breach, but it also caused the regulator to take pretty serious action. As you said, you mentioned $1.8 billion worth of fines, even as recently as the last few weeks. Another 16 firms in the US got fined a further $80 million between them for exactly the same issue. So really, it's reinforcing how important it is to have all of those pieces of the puzzle in order for regulators to enforce and supervise markets appropriately.
Why is it such a struggle for firms to monitor encrypted messaging apps? What's the challenge here?
There's a couple of aspects to this. The sheer number of different communication channels is particularly relevant. We spent quite a lot of time building technology so that we can capture an email, but also a chat message, a phone message or a Bloomberg message, as well as private messages that might be on WhatsApp and so forth. What we've seen demonstrated is that saying you may not use this does not work. So the start point has to be the use of technology to enable business to be undertaken.
So it's a challenge because monitoring encrypted messaging apps requires new technology. And that's an education itself for a number of financial services firms to acknowledge that. And secondly, then to source the technology and to integrate that within their firm and challenges in themselves. And then often those that are intent on wrongdoing then see that those tools are in place and actually find an on-track channel to communicate on anyway, but we'll get to that later. You mentioned prohibition, and that was quite a common response to challenges around tracking encrypted messaging apps amongst the financial services industry. A number of firms just had straight bans in place, particularly pre-pandemic when WhatsApp use was arguably less prolific. It was easier for financial services firms to say, you cannot use this at all, than to source and integrate the tools that they would need to track communications on these platforms. Obviously, then the pandemic shifted a huge chunk of the workforce to working from home setups, and WhatsApp use spiked around that time, in part because a lot of clients wanted to communicate via WhatsApp, and financial services firms began to realize that bans were not workable in practice. So what can financial services companies do to avoid regulatory penalties for encrypted messaging apps use in future?
You've summarized it there well. The recognition that prohibition is not a risk management strategy that works. And it would be fair to say that all firms had that policy in play well before any of this regulatory issue has come to light. And I would just say that there hasn't been an instance where any content that has been identified in a missing communication was actually wrongdoing. So the nature of this is that the policy has been breached. However, this SEC action has reinforced that just prohibiting isn't good enough. There needs to be some element of supervision around that. So this SEC action has resulted in firms reviewing their whole approved communication channels policy. They've increased the penalty. If a colleague is found to have breached this before, it might have been if somebody got caught on a channel saying, actually call me on the other line, call me on the red phone or whatever it might be, that might be a low level policy breach. Now that's already up a second or third level breach, which might have consequences which are either disciplinary or going to impact compensation, because this has clearly had such a profound effect on banks and the amount of fines which are being leveraged. Fundamentally, the use of technology to enable business is the way forward. But in addition to having the technology in place so that clients can communicate in the way they want to with their financial services representatives, it would be wise for the banks and brokers to have checks that all comms are captured. So perhaps this could comprise of periodically checking a large transaction to make sure there's no gaps. They have an end-to-end communication chain where there's no obvious gaps, or there's no area where someone says, oh, we speak again on Tuesday and there's no communication for that particular date. That's obviously resource intensive, so it might be a technology solution to capture it, but nevertheless, they need to be able to stand in front of the regulator and defend the position which they established. Regulators would also need to know what the workforce is being told in terms of training, etc., the penalties for when things go wrong, and what other provisions are in play to make sure that they're compliant.
Okay. And this is one of the areas, whenever I'm speaking to senior compliance professionals within the financial services industry, they always want to know what their peers are doing here. Mm. And at Global Relay, you have recently surveyed 10,000 bank, broker-dealer, fund manager, and other regulated financial services firms on how they are meeting regulatory requirements to adequately monitor employee communications. And one really interesting finding from that report was that not enough financial services companies were tracking their employees' use of social media sites such as LinkedIn, and that tracking of those social media sites therefore represented something of a surveillance blind spot and a compliance risk to those financial firms that had left them unmonitored. How would you like to see financial services companies address that compliance risk? What does good look like there?
That's a great question. I noted in your last pod you spoke about that report we recently published, which gives some of those insights into who is connecting to which communication channel. And the technology solutions we have around compliant WhatsApp capture and recording is fast becoming a broadly adopted strategic solution for many. However, the story doesn't end there. The potential for new channels is still around. And so a firm needs to be able to be nimble and technology savvy enough to accommodate these as are required. The other key element thrown out by that report is some of those social media communication areas. You speak a bit about LinkedIn. It's polarizing opinion. 33% of the survey participants wanted to capture their LinkedIn communications and messages, which obviously means that 67% don't or haven't yet. So in the same vein, firms may have prohibited use of it, but it doesn't stop personal devices being utilized and personal communications can move into a business context. Social media generally is difficult. At the beginning of last year, social media essentially spread the word Silicon Valley Bank was in quite a lot of trouble, and that massively accelerated the speed of withdrawals and ultimately the demise of the bank. And some oversight of social media seems likely to be a forthcoming requirement at some point. Whether the regulators get to that, I'm not quite so sure, but there is certainly focus around social media.
Okay, and I would like to get to what you expect to see from regulators in response to social media surveillance generally, but also to that LinkedIn blind spot that we've referenced. But before we go there, you mentioned that monitoring LinkedIn was a polarizing area. Why is it that we have 2/3 of respondents to your survey not tracking that?
It's a good question. The fundamental position needs to be one you can defend if you're challenged by the regulator, and that usually starts with a market abuse risk assessment. So you've got an underpinning document where you're outlining all of your inherent risks. So an inherent risk from a market abuse risk assessment generally might be something like insider dealing, and then you'll have some control framework to make sure that you manage that risk appropriately. The consequence of that is you end up with some residual risks, which you then need to either work on or you might accept because the risks are so low they're within your risk appetite. But the same applies in principle to your channels of communication. You should certainly be having a list of those which the business is going to feed into to say these are the channels that we need covered in order for us to conduct business. And you've got a list of controls to make sure that they reconcile. So you've got coverage from a record keeping and a surveillance perspective of all the channels of communication which a firm required in order to conduct its business. That's your first element. Now, starting to dabble into the social media becomes more difficult because there's some personal aspects to this, but there's certainly some suspicious aspects. And when I'd read the report and saw LinkedIn was so prominent, it was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, because of course it seems to be the social media channel of choice for financial services globally. Certainly it feels like it's something that people use when they might be looking for a job, and as an employer you may or may not wish to know that. I know there's some data privacy elements to that, but generally social media is used for advertising or selling, and if people are putting financial services information on there from the firm they represent, then that becomes business communications, and therefore that is required to be captured. In a more darker sense, if you haven't got an email address for an individual, you can go on LinkedIn, generally manage to track them down and be able to throw them a message on their messaging app without having any details of the actual email. Now, that could then in turn be used because you know it's not being monitored because it's not an email, and therefore somebody who is trying to do something wrong might use it. So that's why we're seeing a polarized view on LinkedIn, but that's not in isolation. There will be other social media channels that are used to contact people and share information that perhaps they ought not to. So it's a moving feast for banks and brokers, and you've got to be able to demonstrate that you've at least sought to try and assess the risk and managed it appropriately so that you can defend that position when challenged.
So there needs to be a clear compliance reason, a clear regulatory driver for tracking websites like LinkedIn. 2/3 of firms perhaps might not feel that exists.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's hard to know whether or not there is actually wrongdoing going on. But as we say, 1/3 of firms that we surveyed, and bearing in mind the survey was across 10,000 firms, so it's a healthy large number, feel that there is enough concern to at least have that within their record keeping portfolio for surveillance for potential for market abuse. So they want that information stored so that if they are requested, they can provide it. So they think it's sufficient. There is technology for that. We have a connector that is able to capture the attributes of LinkedIn, including all the messaging, so we can keep record of it, archive it, and also subject it to the same monitoring as we would for other communications. And where we see new communication channels leaping up, we've got a team of technologists that work on our connectors. So there is a way forward, and determining that you've got the correct list of different communication channels in scope remains critical. You also need to make sure that you're covering the correct employees. So they tend to be front office traders, because they're the ones that are likely to have the interaction with others in the market and therefore run some risk of market abuse, either being subject to it or committing it. And there is some cost associated to this. So if the business has got 50 different connectors that they want, there's going to be an associated cost, and there might be an economy of scale to say, well, actually, do you need every single one of them in order to conduct the business that you do? It might be that you've got one client somewhere that wants to use something that's slightly more esoteric. Is that worthy from a compliance perspective when you've got to do quite a lot of downstream work, both to collect all that information and then to review it?
Okay. And connectors, are you able to explain what they are?
Essentially, each of the communication channels is slightly different in the way that it's made up. So we obviously understand that an email is going to have different characteristics from a chat message, and a chat message in Teams is going to be different from a Slack chat message, for instance. So what we're doing is building a connector where we can have the common attributes within it and be able to capture it. So those attributes might be who is conducting the conversation, the metadata, if there's an email address, the content of that conversation, disclaimer, the signature, all of those different attributes need to be captured in order to both archive correctly and be able to search and index it. But also, if you want to conduct some proactive market abuse surveillance around that, we might want to see every time Lucy and Rob have a conversation, I need to be able to identify that Lucy and Rob were in this communication so we can proactively identify any characteristics of market abuse.
Okay. And as we've discussed, a major part of the challenge for financial services companies seeking to monitor their employees' conversations is that whenever a company puts the tools in place to monitor previously on-track communications platforms, those intent on misbehaving simply shift their conversations to channels that the company cannot yet track in a bid to continue to circumvent the eyes of compliance. How do you future-proof in such a scenario?
It's a great question. What is a challenge to all compliance professionals everywhere? If you've got somebody who's intent on committing market abuse or doing something that's dancing close to the fire, then it's up to them to be on their best game to be able to identify that. And that might not be entirely around communications, but ultimately the way that we would propose that you future-proof your solution is by having an open technology that things can be added to. If you've bought a technology that nothing can be added to, then it's likely to get out of date very, very quickly. A lot of the institutions that we deal with also focus on some areas, which means they might want to have enhanced surveillance controls in some particular asset classes or some particular geographies because they're particularly concerned, or they're a bigger player, so they've got a bigger risk and therefore they need a bigger set of controls around it. So the technology solutions need to be sufficiently flexible to be able to accommodate a build as well as buy piece of tech so that the data scientists, the bigger banks can adopt new areas as well as those which are being provided by the vendor.
Okay, so leave the door open for rethinking solutions when it becomes clear that that needs to happen and make sure that you are constantly reviewing the efficiency of the tools that you have in place.
Agree, yeah, completely.
Okay, and we've discussed the reaction from US regulators to bankers' WhatsApp use. And one of the main US regulators, the Securities and Exchange Commission, has since been reported to be looking to shift its focus from bankers' WhatsApp use to ensuring that financial services companies are appropriately monitoring employees' use of video communications platforms such as Teams and Zoom. And I recently spoke with Global Relay's Jenny Clark, who mentioned that such a shift in regulatory focus would send people into a bit of a frenzy. Why is that? What are the pain points?
Video is an interesting one, and not least clearly due to the massive outbreak of different video channels due to COVID. The main concern with the video is around the cost of storage. An audio call has a much smaller cost, but video gets very big very quickly. Those large files and cost of storage are really concerning financial service participants because of the sheer number of meetings that are taken through that medium. At the moment, we've seen that firms are capturing the audio part of a video call, and they feel that that may be a proportionate strategy, but the regulator views video as just another communications channel, and therefore, where it seemed to be a material risk, that should be captured. There is this theoretical concern that somebody may be saying something, but showing something else on the screen, so lifting up a sign or demonstrating a whiteboard in the background that may have some information on it which should not be shared. Until that enforcement case comes along, I suspect there will be a bit of conjecture over whether or not this is a requirement, but if video was required to be undertaken comprehensively for the same population that's presently in scope for monitoring, it would be a step change in what's required and a step change in the costs that are associated with capturing communications.
Okay. Are you seeing US-based financial services firms preparing for this shift in focus, and how are they preparing if so?
Yeah, the focus at the moment is more voice than video specifically. So voice call recording has been a requirement for a while because you're needed to record those communications. But the monitoring aspect of that becomes very challenging as well. Obviously, languages, dialects, accents, colloquialisms, background noise, etc., makes accurate capture and potentially transcription of voice calls and monitoring difficult to accurately capture what has been said and by whom. Clearly, that's critical if you're trying to identify something suspicious. We have seen the UK regulator fine a UK broker in 21-22 just short of £5 million for failing to have the appropriate systems and controls to detect market abuse through a voice call. That was mainly due to the fact that the huge material proportion of their activity was done through voice. That sent some fairly significant shockwaves through the industry in Europe in particular, because that was the first material case where there was a suggestion that there is a prevailing risk of voice that needs to be identified, managed, and reported. Mm. That has been a game changer, which has led to a flurry of interest in trying to capture voice and undertake the surveillance of it more comprehensively than ever before. And having spoken to numerous compliance surveillance practitioners, they're seeing voice has uncovered other things, which falls under what the FCIE describe as non-financial misconduct, which is bullying, harassment, physical aggression and sexual misconduct. So there's a lot going on in this particular space. One of the recent events that I attended, a UK regulator suggested they believe there's a close connection between poor general conduct and market abuse. And the voice element of this seems to be the channel where much of that misconduct is contained. So it's going to be a moving feast moving forward, and we'll see voice and video communication being part of that conversation.
I'm surprised to hear that voice surveillance remains such a challenge. I remember writing an article 6 or 7 years ago about banks' responses to what were then a relatively new regulatory focus on tracking voice. And as part of that, I reported that one bank had asked its traders to speak in English when approaching any trades because the surveillance tools at the time for voice did not pick up any other language accurately other than English. And that was 6 or 7 years ago. So why have we not seen much progress here? It sounds like we haven't.
It's a great question. I think fundamentally, the whole language problem, dialect problem, accent problem, using very, very specific language, colloquialisms on top of that, as well as background noise, means that capturing that from a technology perspective is very difficult if you're going to run some monitoring across it. So that technology issue has inhibited investment to some degree. What we're seeing more recently is that technology is moving forward. The majority of the solutions in play transcribe a voice call into written and then run that across a series of models to identify whether there's some suspicious characteristics within it. That transcription element has been difficult because of the challenges that we've suggested, but it's becoming a little bit easier due to things like artificial intelligence, which can put a piece of sentence together. And if you are missing a word or you're unsure about what a word is in the transcription engine, it fills in the gaps a lot more accurately than ever before. And that's being adopted on a much more wholesale level. And certainly Global Relay are exploring all of those options in the technology that they provide too. And so it's moving quite quickly now, having stayed at a very unsatisfactory level for a period of time. But you're absolutely right. There probably should have been greater action sooner, as it feels like there is some material amount of risk within those voice calls.
Okay. And we've discussed the US regulatory reaction to a number of these issues, but I'm interested to hear what you expect from regulators in the UK in relation to mobile communications surveillance in 2024, and also more generally what you expect from both US and UK regulators in relation to the social media challenge that we've discussed.
Regulators do tend to follow each other globally. Communications record-keeping scrutiny seems unlikely to be going away anytime soon. Regulators previously were more interested in the trading than anything else, but they're realising that there's many more concerns in the communications than they anticipated. With increased focus on employee conduct, and I talked a bit about that non-financial misconduct, as the FCA call it, greater scrutiny through communications monitoring will be coming to bear. And what that means is that on both sides of the Atlantic, widening the existing population within scope of monitoring. So we talked about the front office being the general folks being recorded and having their messages reviewed. There's potential to have more employees within your firm be subject to that monitoring. So I see the regulators being more concerned about the conduct of the professionals that are undertaking financial services activity. And I see them taking some action in order to supervise that conduct in a more prescriptive way than ever before.
Okay. And you mentioned the Financial Conduct Authority's increasing focus on non-financial misconduct, and that relates to regulated financial services workers' misconduct outside of the day job. And for the FCA to take action, it has to be behaviour that calls into question that individual's fitness and propriety to do their role in financial services. It is something the FCA has long been talking about focusing more on, but more recently they have taken quite proactive steps to show that they are serious about a non-financial misconduct crackdown. Do you think that that focus on the FCA will encourage more firms to track their employees' communications on social media sites and particularly address this LinkedIn surveillance blind spot that we've discussed?
The FCA have absolutely committed to doing more in this area. We've seen them write to a broad selection of financial services firms. They sent a letter out to all the insurers in London, which is a slightly different approach from what we've seen in terms of banks and brokers usually coming under the most extreme scrutiny. But insurers have received a letter that seeks them to provide instances of non-financial misconduct over the last 3 years, what category they are in, and what action was taken, which may be quite a difficult questionnaire to complete for some of those firms if they don't have very much in the way of oversight or supervision in that particular area. So there's going to be a broadening oversight of this across financial services. You mentioned social media, and obviously the personal data protection issues that are going to rear their head around this, it's going to be difficult. But if you join a financial institution, generally you're required to give details of your broker to enable the firm to track any personal account dealing activity that you undertake. So there is a bit of a privacy issue around that, but financial services firms need to protect themselves from the potential for insider dealing. So they need to see those details of when you trade on a personal account basis to make sure that you're not demonstrating any conflict of interest by what you've seen at work and then what you do as a personal investment. Now, would it be such a stretch to see firms requiring individuals to give up their social media detailed names, handles, and contact details in the same way, in order not necessarily to routinely monitor them, but if there was a trigger for suspicion, they were able to track that and perhaps review it under those circumstances. Now, that might be a long way away, but you know, when you go to work in a financial institution, often you're being compensated quite well. Nobody's making you go and do that work. And if you've got nothing to hide, then you've got nothing to hide. But that might just be my personal view.
So you're saying that there is a chance that this focus on the FCA on non-financial misconduct might encourage financial services firms to ask their regulated employees to enable them to track their communications on a platform like LinkedIn to make sure that there is no wrongdoing going on there.
There's certainly a chance. If you consider where social media might play an influential role, such as fake news, etc., somebody spreading information which is untrue, which affects the price of an underlying regulated asset, then ultimately the regulator probably will seek to try and track that down in some way. So that isn't such a far stretch from monitoring that or having that information at least to be able to review, even if it's not routinely. And therefore, regulators might require a firm to get that information from an employee, or if they hold it already, to submit that or report that if there is a problem.
Okay. And have you seen or heard anything from the financial services industry in the UK that makes you think that they are thinking about doing that?
I'd say the speed with which social media can impact a firm concerns them enormously. And notwithstanding when we saw that Silicon Valley demise, the speed with which people are able to withdraw their money is also a new aspect of the digital age, right? You can get your money in and out of an account in seconds. That, in conjunction with social media, makes even the most established and financially secure companies very edgy, and obviously causes the regulator some challenges around making sure that markets are fair and competitive and stable, and therefore encouraging people to invest in them. So anything that starts to fall into that area of instability or concerning around market integrity, the regulator is going to have some view on it. And certainly they're thinking about how they can manage social media and making sure that posts which might have an impact on regulated securities are trackable, or at least they can find out whether it was intentional to move a price in order for somebody to benefit.
Okay, really interesting. And Global Relay recently hosted the FCA's head of secondary market oversight like Jamie Bell, and he discussed the FCA's views around social media use within the financial services industry and had some comments on the FCA's preferred approach to policing bankers' WhatsApp use. To summarise, Jamie Bell said that they were unlikely to follow the US's example of an aggressive clampdown and would have a stronger preference for the industry implementing best practice and policing their own use of WhatsApp and alerting the FCA where they felt that there was a misuse. So putting the onus on the industry to monitor that in as effective a way as possible rather than on the FCA to clamp down. I just wondered whether you could summarise your views on his comments and particularly on the WhatsApp point.
There is a slight distinction between the US regulations and the UK regulations in this area. The US requires capture of all records potentially relevant to business. So it's a really comprehensive, no holds barred approach. In the UK, the wording is adequate communications relating to business. And therefore, what Jamie was trying to convey was they were taking a much more proportionate approach. That's not unreasonable. And many have criticized the SEC for fining a lot of firms a lot of dollars when actually there's no evidence of any wrongdoing. It's just that people have failed to capture the communications that they should. So there is a reasonable position there. And that proportionality element is also reflective in the FCA's approach more generally. They've got a lot of risks to manage on the whole. Resources are going to be inevitably limited, and part of the FCA's challenge is that their resources are somewhat finite. So on social media, there is going to be an ongoing, vigilant, watchful eye.
Okay. And lastly, what action points would you like listeners to take away from this conversation?
So we are a technology company that are seeking to try and provide some support for the financial service industry primarily. Having the capability to be able to monitor your employees' communications is extremely important. From an employee perspective, people like to work for a socially responsible and ethical organization and don't want somebody else to compromise that by virtue of their communications. Organizations want to try and prevent reputational damage, and the mantra of many compliance professionals I know, the stuff that they catch could have probably prevented some really serious damage, but they don't necessarily get the full credit for it. So Global Relay is in business of seeking to provide technology solutions which will help from a market abuse, a conduct and an integrity perspective for organisations in their record keeping.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Rob. It's a fascinating area and this has been a really interesting conversation.
Thank you very much for letting me join, Lucy.
You've been listening to Following the Rules with Lucy McNulty. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd be very grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe on all the usual channels. It helps other people get to know us too.